Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain, Bradley Burrows, and guests.
Welcome to the NZ Tech Podcast. We are here with episode 31.
Bing, baby, bing.
Hey, you're not allowed to advertise products in here, Brad.
Bing, 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 bing.
You always make noises, but you're not allowed to make noises advertising products.
Come to think of it, it kind of is a bit of an advertising noise, isn't it?
It's one of those stupid phone rings.
Trying to get himself off the hook. Well, welcome along, listeners. Thanks for joining us on this episode of the NZ Tech Podcast. You're here with myself, Paul Spain.
You've got Bradley Burrows.
And Skip Parker.
And I'm back in the studio with the team. Very cool. Very, very cool.
Good to have you back here in person.
Yes. Skype was fun, but it's nice to be here in person.
It is. It's always good. And a little bit more laughter and hilarities, which have taken place before we started recording. But hopefully there'll be a little bit of that mixed into the show as well.
That's all serious now.
All very serious. Now, Windows 8, there's been a whole lot of information that Stephen Sinofsky from Microsoft has been sharing online. There's a whole blog about all these little snippets about Windows 8, which I guess aren't kind of the big news, but there's been a few interesting bits, and there's been an announcement around Media Center capability.
Yeah, so for people that listen to this show or listen for the first time, I'm a huge, not Microsoft's Media Center fan, but just Media Center fan in general. I've got all of them at home pretty much, but they've announced now that they will be including Windows Media Center in Windows 8, which is absolutely awesome. But I've just read that in whatever release we get at build, it would not be included in that build and that release. So I'm a bit bummed. I would have liked to have seen it in a couple of weeks, but we're going to have to wait a little bit longer.
But surely that means an improvement on the existing.
Yeah, well, we don't know. I mean, I've read the blog and I've read a few other people that have been trying to rip apart the current leaked builds that are out there. And there's not a lot that's going on with Windows Media Center, but for them to acknowledge it's going to be there, I mean, my wish list is a tile-based interface that can hook in with Kinect-type devices, which allows you to do voice control, very similar to what the current Xbox interface would be. I'd also like to see some really, really good native mounting of ISOs built into Media Center. They've announced that they're going to do that in the operating system. And a better, rather than having to pull in metadata for videos and movies from third-party tools, have it natively built in. So that would be my wish list, Stephen, if you're listening, please. But yeah, I'm really, really pleased at doing it. I was really worried they were going to drop the product completely and just have it as a Xbox-only styled.
Well, it is one of those niche things, isn't it? I mean, not a lot of people run their home cinema, their TV capabilities through a PC, but there is a large segment of the tech sort of enthusiast community that does that, right?
Yeah, and I mean, obviously Google do it. Google have Google TV. There's a lot more where, I mean, I was shopping
but
for a
TV. But that's not a particularly highly adopted product, and it doesn't run through a PC either. That's more
They're building the PCs into it.
It's more a set-top type box or built into the TV itself rather than Media Center, which is actually, in most cases, is a separate PC, quite separate from the TV in terms of the device.
I disagree with you on that. There's a lot of Windows embedded now going into TVs over in Japan, which is the full-blown Windows 7 built into a TV.
I'm not in Japan, Brad.
No, but I'm just using that as an example.
I haven't seen any such devices launched into the retail market here in New Zealand, is what I'm saying.
Well, we've got nothing in New Zealand, so our TV system's just...
But in saying that, I've got a lot of friends that I'm actually who will watch TV off their PCs.
Correct,
now.
Yeah.
So it's a really fast-growing trend. Like, you wouldn't have this conversation with people a year or so ago. Now, everyone seems to be doing it.
Well, TV on demand, I think TVNZ have done a great job there at pushing out the TV on demand through the web portals. I mean, you were talking a couple of weeks ago how that's picked up dramatically. What was the stats that you gave us? It was like a 300% increase in traffic on the TVNZ demand side or something. I remember you rattling off. You're looking very confused at the moment. But yeah,
I didn't give you those figures.
Yeah, you did.
The audience stats are going through the roof. They are starting to go through the roof.
Yeah. No, it is improving. Now, on that, it's a little bit of a related topic. I have that's how I operate most of the media in my home is through my network. Obviously, Netflix, which we've discussed on many shows before, and some of those other online services, and Windows Media Center through Windows 7 onto my Xboxes. So I've made the jump this week to cut the cord on Sky TV. I've cancelled my subscription.
Did they actually... Because I've heard people actually, when you try and cancel it, they throw things at you to keep your subscription. Did they do that too?
Well, because mine was a sort of a discounted subscription anyway, because I'm with Vodafone at home for my broadband. And the Vodafone guy said, expect a call from Sky TV. They should call you within a day or two in regards to, you know, returning your equipment. And it sort of, you know, I got that impression that they probably would try and keep me. But I haven't had such a call yet. They said they'll call you, pretty soon, but hasn't happened.
So can I ask why? I'm interested because... I'm in a position, the only reason I keep Sky is because of the sports, because I love my sport. If I could get that some other way, I wouldn't do it. So why have you got rid of it?
So I'm not a mega sports fan, and the, for instance, Rugby World Cup type stuff is going to be available on through other, you know, channels other than just Sky. So obviously I'm interested in those games. And I'm just finding it's just not getting a whole lot of use. And now we've got the Roku box, which we can watch news, you know, content on from, you know, various providers, you know, directly.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Windows Media Center system, things such as, you know, news on whichever channels and Campbell Live, those sort of various programs can all be pre-recorded. And I watch them later and skip the ads and so on. I don't need... to pay Sky to give me that content. And what I found was even on Sky, the majority of the content I'm watching actually is off free-to-air channels.
Did you tell your wife you're doing this, by the way?
Well, we're in the process of sort of moving. So, you know, it was sort of like, well, we're not going to need this. We're going to move somewhere else. We're using Netflix so successfully in terms of getting movies that... it's actually much better to watch a movie through Netflix or Zune or one of the other channels, Netflix through what's in their catalogue, although that does seem to be shrinking a little bit, or other services like Zune where you can pay, you know, like renting a DVD and iTunes to get movies, that, you know, paying a monthly subscription to Sky for maybe watching, you know, one or two movies a month is... there wasn't really a whole lot of point. I mean, I recorded lots of stuff, but I didn't end up finding that I was watching a whole lot of content that that was actually premium level content.
See, if I could get a service where I could get the kids' channels, because my kids love the Cartoon Network, and I could get the sport, if I could consumerize that area down just so I could choose the blobs that I wanted, because the Living Channel, everything, I'm not too fussed about that. If I could really lock that down or pay per channel, I'd love that, but I mean, Sky will never do that. But if I could, I'm well done. I'm very proud. Very proud.
I mean, occasionally I'll flick across to CNN and some of those news things, but to be fair, the content actually isn't that great. If there's a big story breaking, CNN just usually have the same content on loop, and it's only two or three times a year where there's some big thing that that you're that interested in, and it usually gets covered on the other other. Networks anyway, and of course we can get things like Al Jazeera through Roku Box and other through PC and so on at no cost. Of course, with the Roku Box connect to the TV, that's good. That works fine.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting you say that you're moved away from the, I guess, analog linear nature of television to the on-demand stuff, because that is exactly where everyone's going. And of course, now that we're moving that way, we actually, television broadcasts are now competing with YouTube. I mean, effectively, they're competing for that 5-minute, 10-minute segment of your attention span in the day. So, yes, this whole move, I think, is scaring quite a few broadcasters at the moment to go to this sort of on-demand stuff, which is why TVNZ, and I actually used the TVNZ on-demand service last night, I think, or late yesterday afternoon, and it actually worked quite well. It was very good quality. So, I mean, stuff like that's really going to grab people. I mean, they'll go in and they'll consume what they need and then move on.
So what I'd be interested to see, and we might see if we can lend Paul one of these, is get a PS3. If you had a PS3, you're in the Roku box, with the Roku doing Netflix and your movies and having the PS3 doing the TV on demand, you could actually be quite interested to see, you know, that's your TV 1, 2, and, or 1 and 2 content at least all done. So, Yeah, that's a really. I'd be interested to know, see how you go with that one.
Yeah, no, it's probably worth a go because that's something I haven't tried. Is the TVNZ on demand stuff through a PS3?
Now, if TVNZ could put that into the Roku tab, then I would seriously look at dropping my Sky as well. Actually,
and apparently it's not that hard to fire up a Roku tab to get one designed. So. Yeah, but the thing is that there's not a huge number of Rokus in New Zealand.
No,
is there? So
no, well, it's not targeted at our market just yet. No. So but there are other devices like the Xbox that obviously is a great streaming device. In fact, it's somewhat surprising that that we can't get the TVNZ or TV3 on demand type content through Xbox, but I'm guessing there's some sort of licensing
partnerships. Type.
You know, there's a special deal they've done there to help maybe sell the PS3.
But it is a partnership thing, and I think it's also the broadcasters have to realise that's a device that's growing.
Yes.
And the funny thing about it is that you don't, as a broadcaster, you don't normally think of gaming consoles as your target audience, but as the Xbox and the PlayStation become more of the central home entertainment systems, then people are starting to get, like TVNZ are doing, putting their on-demand channels into the PlayStation space. I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing that heading into Xbox at some stage. But, I mean, they own the largest set-top boxes on the planet, above Rokus, above all these other devices, because they're just everywhere. I mean, they're just so popular and so prevalent.
Oh, can I go into a rant later on in the show?
No.
Around this article that I read in the weekend, the papers that I was texting you guys about.
You better tell us about that now.
Yeah, go on.
So this Muppet wrote this article on the...
I hope he's listening.
On this, on the Sunday Herald, it was about the lounge and where it's moving and everything. And all he's done is gone down to Harvey Norman's at Dick Smith's and grabbed a Apple TV and some other device from there, which I like the Apple TV, so don't get me wrong. And he's just written a really, really poor article of where the home is currently going, what's going on, and... He's pulled out an old touchscreen device that was like a year old. He had the old HP 600 series there. And I'm just thinking, people are going to read that article and think this is where the future's going. And he wrote what he thought the future was going to be. And his whole future was built around Google and Google TV and the search. And I'm sitting there going, have you ever used it? He's obviously just pulled out the marketing blurbs from some Google marketing flyer. And I'm just thinking, any of the home cinema stuff now, whether whatever the product is, all works on that 12-foot screen analogy, whereas if 12 feet away, you should be able to operate the device clearly and have good aesthetics and everything like that.
So he hinted on Google itself.
Yeah, that was his future. His future was Google, all around Google TV, Google search, everything will be Google-based. And currently at the moment, he didn't even mention, from memory, he didn't even mention the Xbox as a device. He mentioned Microsoft had Kinect. He really pushed the Apple TV being a, he called it a live streaming device, which I found sort of not quite correct because it's an on-demand, you pull your content, it's not really a live streaming device. And he just really, it was very poorly thought through to actually try and communicate what's going on because those type of things influence consumers' buying decisions, right?
Well, good luck trying to find a Google device that works.
Oh, no, no.
in terms of television.
And especially in the New Zealand market.
Exactly.
So, it's interesting. I mean, Google do have a broad reach and, if they can improve their product, then it does have a potential to do well in the market in the future. But, right now, it's been
a failure.
It's pretty much been a...
They seem to be tanking a lot of things these days. Major failure.
So... But there's a possibility to turn it around. But yeah, that sounds bizarre.
I was ranting to you guys online. But it was just crazy. If you're listening and you're gonna write an article, do your research. That's all I ask. And if you give an opinion off your research, great. But don't sit there and miss what's going on in the market out there at the moment.
Or at least call Brad, because otherwise he's gonna slate you on the NZ Tech Podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a bit of a light slating, to be honest.
I was being polite because I've got told to calm it down a little bit. Yeah. So.
I think quite a few broadcasters, though, are actually looking at being more device agnostic. I mean, they're trying to get their broadcasts into multiple platforms. So let's not hinge on the Google. Let's not hinge on even Microsoft TV was a bit of a swing and a miss.
Oh, it was a failure.
So, I mean, you don't want to get into that, paint yourself into a corner of a product and then go, we've spent all this money and it's just now nothing and no one's buying it. You want to be in as many products as possible. So you just want to You don't want to play with the hardware. You just want to play with the distribution
and the experience. And this is, I go back to the whole 12-foot experience model, right? Wherever you are, you know, if you write any articles around that type of experience for the lounge, the product is agnostic because it's got to meet those requirements. And they also talked around how TiVo had been a massive failure in New Zealand, which.
Yeah, it just hasn't really taken off.
No, TiVo has been a huge failure. You didn't use TiVo, did you, Paul?
No. And the people that have used it have had various products with the stability of it. And, I mean, yeah, I think it varies according to that, you know, each user will probably have a different story on it. But I think the overall feedback hasn't been particularly positive, I'd have to say, from those I've heard from and talked to that have got it.
It's a TV recorder.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. So you had some fun this week, haven't you? You've been out socialising for the NZ Tech podcast. Where's the one you went on down at Britomart?
So, there's been a few bits and pieces on. UB have launched their new sort of, what would you call it? Their sort of showcase store, I suppose, down at Britomart in the new that new space down there with some real sort of premium or high-end retailers starting to launch.
So who is UB for people that don't know what they do?
So UB used to be called Magnum Mac, and they're a retailer that sells technology but with a real sort of creative focus. So if you go into their store, they're showing off the latest in terms of digital camera type technology, software for, you know, graphic design and creating. There's a whole bunch of products, but their focus is around leveraging technology to creative things.
Cool. And are they PC, Mac, and Android based, or are they predominantly Mac based?
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing, because they're telling a story that, hey, you know, our we've come from Mac, but going forward, we're much bigger than that. But what I was surprised was that it looked really like an Apple store. Or what an Apple retailer, you know, Apple retailers that I've seen in other parts of the world, not, you know, an Apple branded store, but, you know, retailers selling Apple products. It was quite typical of those in the regards that I didn't sort of see, you know, some fancy Windows based machines and that sort of thing there. It was very, very Apple centric.
But, I mean, I like it. I think this is cool. I think it's neat that we're actually starting to get these stores telling a story and doing it. You know, it'd be great if they start showing other products. You know, it'd be great if they start doing PCs and Android devices to do that story as well when they meet, obviously, the aesthetics and everything else and the usability thereafter. But, no, I'm at GoUbi. I'll definitely pop down there in the week and have a quick squiz.
Yeah, no, it's a cool store. And, I mean, they definitely put on a pretty cool party and, you know, good music and all the rest of it. And as part of that, one of the things that they showed off were these exclusive iPad covers. That these are really, this is really pricey stuff, but basically that have been handmade and so on. So if you know someone who just, you know, you can't find something cool enough for them and they've got an iPad, you get them one of these iPad covers. They're up to $350 a piece.
Shivers. So I can buy my HP Mini almost that much.
What? You're joking me.
No, so...
They probably cost $5 to make, too.
So quite pretty. Well, one of the ones that they had were from the Cut Collective, and these ones have been handmade, and there were only 10 of them. So, yeah. But there you go. Interesting stuff. Not something I'm going to be buying, I can assure you of that.
For Christmas, Paul, I know what I want now.
There's obviously an audience that is into this sort of this flash designer trendy gear, but
I don't know. I mean, I went into JB Hi-Fi about a month ago, and the whole front of the store was just iDevice accessories, and it was skins and protectors for every color, shape. It was just like.
Well, that's where the retailer makes the money, though, right? Because, you know, we know that the way that Apple operate doesn't give a lot of profit back to the retailer for selling the Apple product. So the way somebody's selling Apple equipment makes their money is on selling, actually, accessories and other bits and pieces. That, you know, I think that's just how it is, unless they sell a huge amount of Apple product. It's probably not a particularly profitable space to be in.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the HP WebOS device, I mean, we were talking about this a little while ago, is that you go on to eBay and stuff, and there's just thousands of accessories now that are up for sale.
Oh, no.
You know, you're right, you're 100% right, is that the accessory range for any of these tablet devices is where people are making their money.
Mm.
You know, businesses live and die by being able to create cool accessories for iPads, Android devices, and obviously the now defunct WebHP web devices.
You know what? We're going to have a NZ Tech podcast iPad cover.
Oh, that's a good idea. Okay. Yeah, well, let's talk to UB, see if we can get one done.
Yeah.
Or bright yellow with the light. Oh, I like this. Oh, I'm going to pop
hey,
in there.
Well, hey, look, if everybody else is in the game, we might as well get in the game too. Just
hey,
for
look,
us.
We're going to ask our listeners feedback. Would you spend $350 on a...
it'll be handcrafted by Paul.
Case.
Hand signed by Paul, Brad, and Skip.
Yeah, handcrafted by Paul, so it may stay connected
yeah,
to
you. We might get $3 for it, guys. but hey, yeah, it's good to have new ideas coming out. You're a really creative bunch, I've got to say. Now, our competition, just an update. We're in the middle of running our HP touchpad giveaway competition. Now, last week, due to some technical difficulties, our podcast did come out quite late. So based on that and the fact that the details of the competition haven't been out there too long, we're going to be running that through until the next episode.
Oh, that's good.
So next Tuesday, 5 p.m. around that time will be the cutoff. So what does that make it? The 13th of September will be the cutoff for our HP touchpad giveaway. It seems that these touchpads, despite being pulled from the market, are in hot demand, as anyone will see if they go for a wander around TradeMe. I've seen these things selling between $400 and $500 now.
Oh, really?
So, people are pretty keen to get their hands on them. And I noticed that Android, there's some builds of Android that are now starting to make their way through that people are testing. The last build, they actually had Android running on the touchpad, but you couldn't actually use the touchscreen to navigate around the device. So they obviously got it starting up, but the ability to actually use it properly isn't there yet. But I guess that's all part of the process of getting there.
That would be the Android Photo Frame OS, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
The borderless version.
Now, is it Microsoft in the gun again? And this is the same issues that Android or Google and Apple were having around location data on their handsets. Have you heard anything about this, Brad?
Yep. So this is the first time they've been taken to court. So a lady in the US has taken Microsoft to court around what she's saying, that even though you click allow when you install an application, just like you do with Android and iPhone and obviously Windows Phone, she's saying that even though you click not allow, it still collects your data and where you're going via GPS, which is the same case that has gone against iPhone users and Android users. So, for me, I think we wanted to see where this was going and what's going to happen, because there's basically, if you put all the manufacturers together of smartphones, they're all getting hammered with pretty much the same type of issues at the moment around user data, GPS location, and Wi-Fi sniffing. I mean, they're basically collecting all this data and what's going on with that data. So, Microsoft obviously responded saying they take privacy very seriously and all the other the legal bits that go along with it. But it'll be interesting to see where this one goes. So, pretty much, if you look at the big three now with Windows Phone, Android, and iPhone, they've all got cases taken against them in various countries.
Big
around
three?
The big three.
Well, they're big. They're three big companies.
Yeah, the big three.
We won't talk product market share at the moment, but anyway, sorry, keep going.
Thank you.
I had to throw that one in because
three big companies that will basically, and so they've all been taken to court at the moment around this location and this GP and this privacy and the data around it. So, from what I've read, there's been no one actually been able to access the data. So, whereas with, I think, the Android or the iPhone, someone's written an app that allows you to track it.
You definitely can with the iPhone.
Okay, so iPhone.
Yep.
This is all, she's obviously got something to back up her statements, which is fine, but they're just she's taken the case. So, yeah, it's all happening over there around this location and GPS and smartphones.
Mm. Mm. No, it'll be interesting to know what the real facts are, because
yeah, it's all a bit light at the moment. The articles are out there.
There's not a whole lot of evidence around that. So yeah,
but there's a whole heap of devices that do the same thing, like GPS devices.
Yes,
sure.
But and when they're powered off, they still keep track of you, and they actually record. You don't even know they record. You can go and pick up a GPS off a second-hand dealer or whatever, and you can go back and look at some of the logs on those if you had the right tools.
Yes. So, and sorry, I got one thing wrong. It's to do with the camera GPS location setting when you start your Windows phone. Just so I clarify the exact point. When you start your Windows phone, you set up for the first time, and you open your camera, it says, do you want to allow tracking data, so you can put that into the images? And that's the particular app she's taken the lawsuit against. Sorry, okay. Just sorry to be specific on that one.
Yep, that's interesting. Now, what's happening with the iPhone?
We chatted
last week that one of the local websites had given away a date of 9th of October that it was going to be launching. There's been a few dates bandied around, but we're starting to really see all the signs that a new iPhone is coming through, which I mean, is pretty much expected. It's not big news.
And they've got this great marketing ploy at the moment where they leave their iPhones in a bar.
It's the first sign that an iPhone is coming.
It's true. It's a new way that Apple does marketing at the moment.
It's like, kind of their new way of announcing a product. Rather than give a keynote speech,
they go to a bar and
leave a phone there.
So, seriously, iPhone employees, why? Why do you leave prototype phones at a bar? Why even take a prototype phone to a bar?
So the latest update is the San Francisco police have confirmed that they have been involved at tracking down this device. And that it is a real story. It's not like a made-up.
But they're saying it's a device, but then the document that they sent out, they didn't confirm what the device was, but the document they sent out was called iPhone 5 dot doc. what did that tell you about
who
what
sent
this
that out? The
so
police or
the
Apple?
Police sent out their press their press thing saying this is what happened, and they wouldn't confirm what the device was, but the file name actually had iPhone 5 in it.
It's
so,
the best marketing ever.
You know,
honestly,
I don't know what Apple paid them off to do this, but yeah, it's just hilarious.
I would have loved to have been at the Apple head office when they saw that one fly through. They must have thought, oh, far out.
It's all publicity is good publicity, right? Yep. We're talking about it. So have, you know, countless thousands of blogs and other media around the world. So, yeah, Apple definitely know how to play the PR game.
Yeah, but, I mean, as sure as the share price falls, an iPhone device is born. I mean, that's just simply it. I mean, they will always be producing a new iPhone device to keep the masses interested and the share price up. I mean, it's just...
They're masters. I mean, Apple is brilliant at getting a product to market and also marketing that product. They're absolute geniuses at it. Really, really are.
So, and this may be the last iPhone device before they go back to the Newton.
Now, talking about genius... Sony's latest move around talking about their network. They're now saying that their gaming network is, wait for it, hack-proof.
Oh, now what? Let's translate.
Is there anything? I mean, can anything be hack-proof? I mean, even the CIA get hacked.
That's an invitation,
sort of claim,
to Anonymous and all those other groups to go and hack it. That's what that is.
Now, what they've done is they actually have maybe secured the network a little bit. But they have invested billions of dollars in monitoring, and they're going to catch you. That's all they're going to do. They're going to try and catch you. Because, yeah, that's just like asking for someone to come and burn your house down, isn't it?
A red flag to a bull or something.
Exactly. It's just some of the stupidest things. Just keep under the radar. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. No, I think that's very, very silly to go broadcasting that your network's hack-proof.
And I don't know if this actually makes much difference to the consumer, because people realize that most of the internet's been hacked in the last 6 months anyway. So why stress that you're hacker-proof when everyone realizes, you know what, let's just move on, Sony's back up and running, let's just continue playing games, let's not stress too much about it. I mean, surely they haven't lost that much market share. And in fact, I actually saw a report the other day that said that, especially in this region, PlayStation 3 is higher selling than the Xbox, supposedly. So, I mean, they're surely not suffering any downturn from their recent hacks. And just by sending out this message, it's kind of like, well, please come and hack me.
Yeah, it's a pretty unusual maneuver. I mean, I think it's unprecedented. I don't know of anyone else in the world who is making those sort of claims around their networks. But I imagine what Sony are doing, though, is saying it's not everything. They're not saying Sony nowhere can be hacked. They're saying this particular service is being produced in such a way that it can't be hacked. And I guess it is possible to have a subset of, you know, of an organization's network that is highly unlikely to be hacked.
Yeah, it's generally stored in a concrete bunker with no cables going into it. But I mean, yeah, it just seems a little bit like the arrogance has kicked in a bit at Sony. And I don't know if I think that's a great thing. Because, I mean, in the past, it seems to have been, I mean, when they first got hacked, there did seem to be a little bit of arrogance that came out from the Sony board and stuff like that and the way they handled stuff. And it's kind of like maybe they've licked their wounds and now they're sticking back into arrogance mode. I don't know. It just seems like a dumb move, very dumb move.
Yeah, I agree. I think you don't be that arrogant to try and say, unless you're trying to cap. You're going out there and saying
they're fishing.
We want to fish you and capture. So
interesting. But yeah. Well, I certainly hope they don't get hacked. That's all I can say.
Oh, I've killed off my Sony accounts.
So yeah, that's time. Yeah. All right. Next topic. What have we got happening there, Brad? There's some open source news around Ubuntu.
Yeah, so obviously as the world moves to the cloud now, Ubuntu has got a new version that is out in beta at the moment, so version 11.10. I am going to try and pronounce this. It is Wanrico Octic. I know. And what this is this has been developed to be a new version of a cloud-based operating system with Ubuntu. As I mentioned, it's out right now. The color that they've given it has been like an asparagus color at the moment. So it's throughout the system. It's a greeny color. And they've also announced that their beta dates of when they're going to be hitting. So beta 2 is going to be the 22nd of September with the final release on the 13th of October. So they've got a really, really quick turnaround time on getting their release cycles out. And I mean, this thing will be live at the end of the October for live production use. So it's been something in the works for about 18 months. It's using that code base, but this is their first cloud-based platform. So everyone's moving this way, it seems, at this point in time. And Ubuntu's now getting on the bandwagon.
Yep. Oh, it's good. It's good.
It's good. Good. Yeah, yep. I think it's great.
Oh, it's good to see. Now, VMware had their conference last week.
Yes.
Now, Brad, you're pretty active in your day-to-day work in the virtualization space.
Yes.
Other than Microsoft sort of making a little bit of a mockery of VMware with their VM Unlimited videos that were video that was going around.
And was that not funny or
that
what?
Was genius.
That was quite entertaining. Was there anything else that you came across from last week that was sort of a major step forward? You know, what's their play in the market? They tend to use their annual conference as a chance to sort of highlight their differentiators. What did you pick up?
Look, with any of these type of conference, whether it's Microsoft, Google, Apple, or even VMware's, they'll throw a gazillion stats at you, right? So they threw, you know, there's more live migrations done than planes flying in the year and da-da-da, but all this sort of stuff. It was all around vSphere 5. That's that product range that's coming out at the moment. They're really trying to, they've obviously been acquiring like crazy a lot of companies over the last 12 to 18 months to start building a full integrated stack to compete against Microsoft. So from email right through to the System Center, or Microsoft System Center product range, so management. So they were talking a lot around that. They've obviously halfway rolled back their new licensing model, which caused a massive uproar in the community out there. They have not changed their statement that unlimited means you pay more. So they've got to fix that up. That got a lot of negative feedback over in the US. But overall, they were just really, really pushing home the vSphere 5 and the messaging around that. It was heavily into that space at this point in time. And they were, like I said, they were doing a bit of damage control around the licensing changes.
Okay. Oh, well, it's good to hear a little bit about what's happening there. I mean, we tend not to, within the NZ Tech podcast, dive too much into these, heavily technical business products. But you know, I guess it's similar to in the consumer space around smartphones and tablets and so on. It's great to see that we've got a competitive market and that the technology is being pushed forward.
Oh, they're a leader. I mean, VMware are a leader in the space. They're,
absolutely,
don't get me wrong. They are the current incumbent top dog, and then you've got Microsoft and Citrix and a few open source platforms chasing them right now.
But the fact that there's that chase going on, that is pushing them, correct, to really, you know, work hard rather than just to, you know, to sit back, because you know, they absolutely need to do that to you know, stop from losing their market share, basically.
Yeah, as we've always said, competition is good, and I think we're going to see it in the space as we move forward for those, that enterprise and data center space. So,
excellent. Now, obviously, iPhone, we've chatted about. We know there's quite a few Android devices starting to, continuing to come out. A number in the tablet space. We've seen, we had the discussion last week around the patent issues that Samsung are having with the Galaxy Tab and so on in Europe and in Australia. Although those seem to have successfully been moving into the local market here in New Zealand.
Yep.
But also in that mobile space, we've got Windows Phone 7.5 with a Mango release. Now, that's seen its first the first handsets announced from HTC last week. So that was a big unveiling in London.
Yep. That looked cool. They look really, really cool. Did you guys have a look at the videos and bits and pieces?
Yeah, what was interesting is something that I imagine that HTC will probably follow up with their Android devices is, you know, I've got a phone here, the HD 7 from HTC, which has got a big 4.3-inch screen. With this new handset, they're going one step further, and they've got a 4.7-inch screen on a mobile. What do you guys think about that? I mean, I'm actually finding this 4.3-inch one is really, really good, and I have no problem at all with the size. And from guys that were actually at that launch event who were sort of thinking this is going to be ridiculous, that extra half an inch is just going to push it over the top. But the sort of feedback I got from people was no, actually it does work, and it's a really good size to have a device. If you're doing web browsing and other things on the device, it just makes it that much more practical. What do you guys think?
So my only problem with Windows Phone 7 is it doesn't seem to use the full screen real estate of the phone. There's always that black bar around the right hand side in the top there. If you're going to have a bigger screen, I want it to use more of the real estate that's on the screen. Now, everyone's going to be switching on their phones at the moment.
Yeah.
So if you...
I think that's only just the home screen where they've got that particular sort of live tile design where you've got that space around it. And that's, I guess, just the aesthetic they're trying to create. It's a visual thing. But if you get into the apps, I mean, the apps are more full screen than in other platforms. You know, it knocks out the space at the top where you've got signal strength and... time and so on. A lot of the apps will actually obliterate that and give you full screen for your games and various other apps. So
that's my only thing.
That hasn't concerned me, you know, particularly. But that handset from HTC is the Titan, and it's also the first Windows Phone to be made entirely out of a single piece of aluminium, which is that sort of unibody thing that Apple have done on their MacBook Pros, and the first Windows Phone to have a 1.5 gigahertz processor and an 8 megapixel camera. So it's a reasonably spec'd up device.
And I was just confirming that I could actually, this was public. It's also the first one to show a front facing camera.
Yes, yes,
and that's a big thing. We have not had any devices do that at this point in time.
No, so I guess that'll be there for Skype and for various other bits and pieces. You've got that front facing camera capability. The other thing which I heard from one of the guys that was at that event was this feature of being able to do tethering or Wi-Fi hotspot that wasn't in Windows Phone before. But one of the chaps that was there had a look on one of the demo devices, and there was indeed an option to turn on Wi-Fi hotspot capability within these new HTC handsets. What we don't know at the moment is whether that functionality will be pushed back to all or some of the older devices, the existing ones in the market, such as the Trophy that's most common here, HTC Trophy in New Zealand, or whether there are some limitations there around which carriers will make that functionality available. It's good to just have that confirmation that capability is certainly there within the operating system. So I hope that gets turned on more broadly rather than being fairly limited. Now, what else have we got? I think we're coming to sort of towards a bit of a close. There were a couple more topics that came through in the news this week. Now, in the Apple space, something we discussed in the past was this new Final Cut X product that came out around the time of Lion.
It didn't get a lot of good publicity, did it?
No, and it was a sort of change, and it was basically a newly built version of the Final Cut product aimed really at consumers. And at the time, they ditched their more professional-oriented version, Final Cut Studio. Now, Apple have started making that one available again. So I think there's a few happy people out there that were, they'd built businesses around Final Cut Studio, and suddenly they were told, no, we're not selling that product anymore, just the consumer-oriented one. So I think that's definitely that's good news. The other product that's just landed on the Mac is a new version of Parallels. I think it's version 7 of Parallels Desktop.
Oh, wicked.
And that's the emulation software or virtualization software that allows you to, for instance, run Windows on your Mac. So that's pretty cool. And last was at the IFA conference in Germany. There was a new 55-inch glasses-free 3D TV that was announced. That's apparently due out in December. So, I mean, we've been talking about this for a long time, and we've seen some devices here on the podcast in the studio, such as the Nintendo 3DS that lets you, operate or it displays a 3D view without having to wear some freaky glasses. This, as far as I'm aware, is the first TV to come to the market that actually does that as well.
Right, to the market, yeah, that's probably the key word, because there have been other screens. If you do a tour of the Boeing factory in Seattle, for example, you see a 3D screen there displaying engine parts and all sorts of stuff.
So there's only one small problem with this whole thing. It's 8,000 euros.
Yeah, but you save yourself 90 bucks on the glasses.
The glass. So, 8,000 euros.
If you have maybe 100 friends that come over, that's what? There's a saving right there, isn't it? For having to buy more.
It's 8,000 euros. So it's a euro at the moment. It's about 50. So we're looking at around about
16K Kiwi.
16K, yeah. I mean, it's pretty good.
Add on GST and you're, probably 18 to 20 grand and you could get yourself one of these new TVs. But I guess when we look back, when the 40-inch TVs were launched in New Zealand, they were between 20 and 30K, but now they're under $1,000. So I guess if this has come out, coming out now, give it a few years and, if it works well, this could be mainstream.
Yeah,
could be mainstream technology. The question is, will it work well? Interestingly, this screen has a resolution which is quad HD, so it's four times the resolution of the current HD screens that we see today, which is I guess also part of the reason for that high cost.
That's just insane.
What can you use it?
840 pixels by 2,160 pixels. So
it'll be good if you have the Hubble telescope lined up in front of it. You'll be able to see high def. But yeah, I mean, that just
super
seems
high def. If you are really, really ridiculous. Close, that's going to look stunning. But
seems ridiculous. Now, I saw some of the other day where Sony even were admitting that some of the 3D sales has not been so hot.
No, it just hasn't, because there's not a lot of good 3D content to watch. Do you want to put glasses on every time you sit down in front of your TV?
No, I disagree. I personally think the 3D experience needs to stay in the cinemas.
That's
my gut feel. I was in a 3D cinema experience the other day, a while back, and I remember this lady in front saying, "This is so cool. We should get a 3D TV." And I thought, "You're going to be so disappointed, because the experience in a theater is very high def, very large, very immersive, full surround sound and everything. You're going to take this experience back home to a 42, 50-inch screen. I mean, unless you're sitting on an ottoman in front of the thing with about a foot away from it, you're not going to get the same experience as IMAX, you know?
Even sitting on the ottoman 2 feet away from it, I don't think it'll be quite the same experience as IMAX.
But that's it. I mean, we get misty-eyed about 3D, and when we actually sit down in front of our TVs, 42-inch especially, and just look at it, you go, maybe.
I agree.
So
I'm not particularly enthused about 3D myself. I haven't, bothered to get a 3D TV, 3D projector, any of that stuff, because, it's not that exciting to have right now. And as you say, the top movies that have got 3D, well, hey, you're going to get a much better experience in a cinema. So yeah, I think. Let's give it a bit of time, and we'll see how things go. But right now, I don't think it's something that I'm encouraging people to sort of dive out and get 3D.
Where it's going to rock is if they actually get 3D into sports. If they can get 3D into sports,
US have got that already.
Yep,
and the Olympics are being recorded in 3D. In fact, I think they're recording Rugby World Cup in 3D.
We're showing it here in New Zealand, Victor.
But you won't be able to. The broadcasters aren't broadcasting it in 3D.
No, they are. They're just doing it in special venues.
Yes.
You can pay for it to go watch it at Vector and sit down and get your 3D glasses.
The broadcasting through on the mainstream on the TV channels isn't in 3D.
No,
is it?
Only New Zealand, Australia, and England are broadcasting in 3D off our feed. So we're actually recording in 3D. We're just not broadcasting in New Zealand.
Yeah.
But in America right now, every NBA, NFL, and I think maybe even ice hockey is all done in 3D option via ESPN. The Rugby World Cup is done in 3D everywhere outside New Zealand or a special location.
I mean, you're not going to watch the news in 3D, let's just be honest, eh?
Yeah, Simon Dallow in 3D.
No, not really.
No, okay.
Not so much.
Yeah, we'll stay clear of that. All right, well, thanks everyone for listening in. If you would like to enter the HP Touchpad competition, please jump across to nztechpodcast.com to collect the details there, and then head across to facebook.com/nztechpodcast to enter, or you can also enter via Twitter, and then just email us your details when you've entered. Now, you can also find us on Twitter, which is at nztechpodcast, and if you're looking for any of us on Twitter, you can find Brad. You're at Brad, B-O-R.
Brad Bohr
is your Twitter handle. Skips is at Urban Kiwi NZ, and my Twitter handle, very easy, is just my name, at Paul Spain. So thanks very much for listening in, and we'll catch you all on the next episode.
Go the All Blacks.
Oh yeah.